Hey there, Jen here. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to make sure that you know that our newest Miracle Month kicks off on Monday, May 6th. The theme of this Miracle Month is becoming a master of your life. If you have not joined us yet, now is the time. It's only a four-week program, the Miracle Month, and we will be together 4 weeks in May. 2024 is flying by. Let's make sure that you're moving forward, taking positive steps to creating and reinventing the next version of you, and making some positive new beginnings for a brighter, happier future. Go to widow180.com/miracle month, and you can learn more about the Master Your Life program. This is 4 weeks of group coaching, whether you're brand new to widowhood or you lost your spouse years ago. This program is for everybody. We will be going over important concepts for rebuilding your life after loss, like how to get motivated about life again, feeling more confidence, making meaning of your life, coping with change, finding purpose, being more resilient, breaking through fear, and building a life that you want. These are all the things that we talk about in the Miracle Month. We talk about attitude and mindset and emotional well-being. If you know you want more, you know you are ready to embrace life again, you are ready to welcome in joy and happiness into your life again, then this Miracle Month program is for you. Each week, you get a new workbook to use during our time together on our live Zoom calls. Head right now to widow180.com/miracle month. You can find all the information there. We start Monday, May 6th, so do not wait. That's widow180.com/miracle month. Now let's get into the show. Hello there and welcome back. I'm so glad you're here and I'm so glad you're listening today. A few months ago, I had the pleasure of meeting our guest on the podcast this week, Eva Still. She has such an incredible story and I seriously could have talked to her for hours. In fact, I might have her back on the podcast again, but I split this interview into two parts. So today you'll hear the first half of my interview with Eva, and I'll post the remaining half in just a few days. I won't make you wait a whole week, I promise. So without further ado, here is my interview with Eva Still. Good morning, listeners. Today's guest has an incredible story to share. Eva Still is joining us today. She is an author, a certified grief educator, a psychotherapist, a yoga therapist, and a wellness retreat leader. Wow. Lots on that list. Her life has taken her down so many unexpected paths, and I'm so glad to have her here today to talk about it all. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jen. It's an honor to be here.
I just want to jump right in. And can you please tell us your widow story and how did you become a widow?
Yes.
We'll just get started there.
Coming up to next month will be 11 years since Drew died. We had been married, well, we'd been together for 9 years, married for 1 week short of five. And it was very sudden. He had cancer, but it was a very positive prognosis. Like death was not an option in our minds. He got up one morning and basically had a pulmonary embolism and died.
Oh, okay.
And I was actually away for the weekend, landed back in Toronto from an overnight flight, called him excited to say, you know, I arrived on time, I'd be able to go with him to his, with him and his mom to his chemo appointment. And a nurse at the hospital where I worked, which was right around the corner from our house, answered the phone and told me to go directly to the hospital. And he was already gone by the time I got there.
So it was a situation where things were going okay with the treatments and the chemo, yeah, and everything was looking on the up and up. Mm-hmm. And he was like, go on your trip.
Yeah.
Exactly. Have a good time. And I know that in the back of your mind, because you weren't there, does that kind of haunt you in some kind of way? Is there guilt there? Like,
absolutely.
What I know, a lot of widows have dealt with that situation where they're not there, experienced some struggling emotions with that. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I think that was one of my, well, no, I don't think I know. That was my biggest regret and my biggest guilt. We had such a beautiful life, such a beautiful relationship. And I think after, because he had had, the cancer had kind of come and gone for 3 years. So I think even with that, there was this like appreciation of our life. So we like did the things we wanted to do. We traveled, we really Like, I have no regrets about our relationship. You know how much I loved him. I know how much he loved me. But that was my regret at not being there with him. I know I told you, you know, when we spoke before that I had this these sort of visits with him, I guess. And, you know, the first few years, in one of them, kind of having this conversation, I guess you could say, I shared this guilt that I had for not being there. And I understood, again, whether this was really from him or from, you know, who knows, but it felt very real to me that he was trying to protect me, that he didn't want me to have that
there
on my shoulders. His mom was with him, and I know she's still so haunted by being, she's haunted by having been with him and not able to save him. And I'm haunted by not being with him. And so I think all
what's
of
the better situation?
Exactly.
There is no better situation. You're not there and can't do anything, or you are there and you have that trauma and you can't do anything. You can't win in any situation. So you're going to have that guilt either way, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will get to, I want to talk more about the visits and stuff, but okay. So what year was that? You said it was 11 years.
2013.
Okay. So 2013.
May 21st.
Okay. You had been working in social work and helping others. So you kind of knew you had some of these tools, how to, I guess, react to what was happening. But even then, I know that that wasn't like, oh, okay, now I'm good.
Exactly.
You kind of knew what to do, but still you're struggling. And that your safe space, a place that you found that provided structure and some real help for you, was that you went to yoga. Mm-hmm. Was that something that you had done before, or did you kind of stumble upon that after?
Not okay. At all. I mean, I used to be very, very active. I did a lot of, Drew and I did a lot of cycling, and I did a lot of kickboxing. So I would go to yoga occasionally if it was like, okay, I need a rest day sort of thing, but I didn't really connect with it. But it was in like those first few months when I just felt like a zombie, like completely robotic, you know, going through the motions and just, and either no feeling at all, just completely numb, or then all of a sudden knocked down by, you know, tsunami of emotions. And I discovered this little yoga studio by my house because I ended up taking 4 months off work, I guess. Because I was working as a psychotherapist in my own grief state, I wasn't able to, you know, hold space for clients at that time. And so I thought, okay, this is something will give me sort of a little bit of routine, a little bit of structure, get me out of the house. And it was a style of yoga that sort of follows the same sequence every class. And so I think there was something, and it was hot yoga. I would go, and at the same, I don't know if you know pigeon pose, where it's like a hip opener. And you fold over. And like clockwork, I would just burst into tears every class in that position. And so there was a part of me that was like, okay, this is like awful and uncomfortable. And I know that this is what I need. And I think even being, you know, in this super hot room, all red and sweaty anyway, it was like, nobody knows, or maybe
here it is.
And I don't really care.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that became my kind of this place where I started to connect, I guess, back between my mind and body.
Yes. Okay. So tell us how you ended up in Bali 2 months after Drew passed away.
Very impulsively.
Okay.
I guess I really got connected with, you know, felt this deep connection with yoga. And I guess, I think at that point I was starting to doubt or to question, would I be able to go back to my work as a therapist? And I remember one night, the insomnia. And so I would get up, I spent most nights just looking through pictures, looking through pictures. And one night, right around my birthday, actually, to the beginning of July, I looked, instead of opening up her pictures, I just found myself typing in like yoga retreats for grief.
Okay.
Nothing popped up. Now there's lots, but at that time, no. But what came up was yoga teacher training in Bali. And at that time, I think I was just always looking for signs, and I interpreted these things as signs, I guess. And I booked it. Just like, whatever, like what I get kind of that sense as well of like, okay, what do I have to learn?
This is a sign.
Exactly.
I know. Yes.
Exactly. And it was,
you start to like
life changing.
Open up to, okay, what direction is life trying to take me? And you start to notice these little nudges and these little pushes, and you're like, okay, maybe it's that way. I'll go that way. Oh, I love it. That's fantastic. Okay, so you went and you were gone for two. Wait, how long were you gone? In about,
It
yeah.
was a like just over a month. So it's one of
Okay.
those like 200-hour trainings where you start, like 5 in the morning to 9 at night kind of thing. Basically for a month.
Did you love it?
I wouldn't say that I loved it. I felt very, it was really good for me and it changed my life, definitely for the better, but it was a struggle, I think. Even just the like intensity of being there all day. And I was so new to yoga. And so going there, and of course it's all these people like standing on their heads and doing these fancy things. And I'm like, still can't touch my
Right.
toes.
You're
It's
new,
like,
right?
what am I doing here? But I think also within a lot of the yoga philosophy, there's of course this spiritual element and, the afterlife and all of that. And that was something I grew up, largely without any kind of religion or spirituality. And so it was this sort of almost this like little window of possibility cracking open of like maybe like death isn't the like just and we're just this physical
Yeah.
body and then it stops and there's nothing more, which is that makes losing someone from our physical world that much harder because then so I think just having this like opening of possibility for me gave me, I don't know, it shifted something.
Oh, absolutely. While you were there, you told me that you had some experiences that you called visits. I love this. I want to hear all about it. What was that first one like? Were you at, I don't know, were you just like sitting on a beach by yourself somewhere and this happened? Or were you like in a group or were you led by somebody and they said, okay, we're going to try and connect. How was that? What was that
No,
like?
it was completely on my own. And it was always like when I was sleeping and
Okay.
I had had them at home before. And so it would be like, I'd be sleeping. And if somebody sits like on the edge of the bed or that like kind of pressure. And so I would feel that and wake up and I could, like I felt his presence, but there wasn't. And the ones that I had at home were like kind of agonizing because it was like, I could feel him. But there were like I couldn't connect with him, if that makes
Okay.
sense. And then the ones in Bali, what started happening is I'd still feel that sensation. And I could never, it was like I didn't see him, but we were having these conversations, I guess,
Yeah, okay.
physical conversations and things that, again, maybe it was my subconscious, maybe it was just like what I wanted to hear.
Right.
But even things like his. He was really close with his grandfather, and his grandfather had a really long struggle with cancer. Another one of these conversations, Drew had said, like, it was going to keep coming back, and I didn't want to suffer like grandpa suffered.
Yeah.
And so there was just this sense that he, in some ways, if given the choice
He
of
chose.
he chose, and that
He
he, in
chose.
another one of those conversations, when I had said that I felt so guilty for not being there, that he had said, I needed that weekend with my mom to be with her as I left the world, as I one was when I entered. So again, depending on people, your beliefs.
Oh, I know. I talk about this stuff all the time about connecting with them, having conversations, having these questions that keep repeating in our minds the thoughts of things that we could have done or the what ifs and all that, all of it, right? I thought about that too, that if they were given a choice and it was their choice, like it was like more in their control and that that's what they wanted to see happen, then that is obviously going to give me more peace because that was their choice. It's like these weird mind things that we kind of talk. Are we talking ourselves into it or are we getting these signs from the universe? I don't know. But the point is to be open to all of it. And that's what I love. And sometimes that involves removing yourself from your day to day and going to Bali for a month.
Exactly. Yeah. And
It.
I think with those things, and I do, in working with clients around thought work, it's like, does having this thought make you feel better? Does it help you do the things that you want to do and live your life in the way that you want to live? Then keep that thought. Like, it
Keep
doesn't
that
matter
thought.
if it's true or false.
Exactly.
And so I kind
Exactly.
of feel that with my beliefs. It's like, if this peace of mind that it's not harming anyone if I hold them
No.
to be, real visits with him or with my imagination. I don't
I hope that people that are listening to this right now, they really take that to heart and they don't question themselves or make themselves feel like it's silly or that something that they shouldn't be doing, because I, if it brings you comfort, then do it. Right. I totally agree with that.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No.
I was just going to say, I've spoken with so many people, and especially so many widows who have those experiences of having these conversations or these visits or these presents, again, whatever word you want to give to it. And there's often this sense of like, I don't want to say it because I don't want people to think, you know, that I'm like crazy or I'm hallucinating or whatever it is. But then when you see so many people having the same experience, it's like, okay, there's
something
there.
To it. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that we talked about this. You were gone for a little while. Did you sell your house in the first year? Like, what was your decision about that? Okay.
So the house, the kind of final decision of leaving Toronto. So after Bali, I went back to work, struggled a lot, but kind of got back into like the rhythm of things, ended up moving to an apartment, like on the other side of town, and then renting out the house.
You came back, you were trying to get back into work, thinking that this was maybe the step you were supposed to take. I tell people, like, you just don't know until you try things and how it's going to make you feel. But you told me that you were living and working and going through the motions, but you felt just this angst. And oh my God, I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. You felt like there was just supposed to be more. There was supposed to be something else to life, right? Like, mm-hmm. It can't just be this, right? And then you told me, so there were three major things that happened all within 3 weeks of each other. Mm-hmm. And that was just like, all right, universe telling you. What were these things that happened? What happened in those 3 weeks?
So the first one was I got assaulted at work, which was the third time that had happened, actually. But this was by far the worst and very traumatizing. It was startling. And I think just that sense of, you know, the suddenness of Drew's death as well. It was like the shattering of, like, the world wasn't safe anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like all this predictability, this kind of sense of control that was kind of shattered. And then the assault at work was just another kind of layer of this, of doing what I should be doing in a place that's supposed to be safe. And it's not.
Yes.
Once again, the world is not safe.
Okay.
And then the second was that I had started seeing someone. I mean, it had been 6 months at that point. It was one of those things, like looking back on it, where, you know, kind of like playing house. It was like, okay, this is the things that I know how to be in a relationship. And, you know, we'd like do the things that I knew how to do in a relationship.
Yeah.
But it just, like, it felt off. But I thought it feels off because basically my doing like the acting out of the life of a relationship, but my heart is like completely closed off. Like there's no feelings there. There's no emotion.
Yeah.
So I kind of chalked up this like twilight zone sense of the relationship to that. And then again, 6 months into it, receive a call from this man's family saying that he's married and has children in another country. And basically that he had invented this like very elaborate and horrific story about the horrible death of his dad, but like looking me in the eyes and telling the sob story about his grief. And so that was, you know, a part of our connection as well, as okay, we're both in this kind of heartbroken place, right? And so when all of this came out, it was again like, okay, so the attack at work, the world is no longer safe. Then this, like people can't be justice, right? So that was the attack at work was on Friday. I get this call on the Sunday. And then the following Friday, my brother was in a very serious car accident and broke his spine in two places. Fortunately, they got him to, anyway, he's fine, but it was very scary. And again, just the shock of anything can happen at any moment. And just this kind of panic of, you know, like fight flight. It's like, okay, I'm out of here. And so the my brother's accident was a Friday. It went into work on Monday and put in my, oh, sorry. That was the other thing. The last straw was I get to work on Monday, you know, going through all of the emails from, you know, everything that happened the day that I had missed when I went out to see my brother in the hospital. And one of them was a coworker who worked on sort of our partner team, his retirement. So all the announcements about his retirement party that were going to be that next weekend. And then an email that he had died on Sunday. And so that was just like the final.
I mean.
And so I got the email and then wrote my letter of resignation. And
if that is not the universe trying to talk to you, like, mm-hmm. I don't even, it's like, okay.
Like screaming, shaking.
Screaming, like, you have got to do something, mm-hmm. you know? I cannot believe. I mean, we talked about this feeling of disconnect, all of that, all of those things would make it feel like, what is happening? You know, like just everything is just surreal. How is this even happening? It's back to back to back things that are continuing showing up in your life. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the breaking point. That's it. Things have to change. Things are going to be different. So what did you do? Where did you go? Like, what did you decide? You were just like, that's it. I quit my job. And okay, now what? What am I doing?
And I was very fortunate because I had a wonderful manager. We're still close. And when I went to give my resignation, she said, wait, you're going through a really difficult time. I understand. This is a really good job. You're very good at your job. I don't want you to do anything that you regret. And so she said, why don't you take a year leave of absence, do what you need to do. If you find something on your path that, you know, you discover is your new path, then you make your decision. But if you discover that you just needed to do, you know, your healing and kind of reset yourself, then at least you have this job safe.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Eternally grateful. Yeah, it's a big, a big leap. So I could kind of take this leap of faith, but knowing I had my safety net.
Oh, how nice.
So I booked a trip to, I booked a flight arriving in Uruguay, in Uruguay. And then 7 months later, a flight leaving from Colombia with the intention to kind of backpack my way up. And I didn't actually really plan anything else. It was like, okay, I'll start here.
Start with your ticket. Okay.
See what happens in the middle.
Okay.
That's how I ended up living in Colombia.
When you told me this, okay, my first question was, were you afraid? And then my second question was, did anyone try to talk you out of it?
Everybody. Well, it's interesting because I've always loved traveling. So I think for my family, they were kind of like, ooh, like this does not seem like a good idea at all. But also seeing it as maybe this is a positive sign that, you know, I was returning to something that I loved so much. They were nervous, but ultimately supportive. A lot of people, yeah, I guess more kind of distant friends who didn't know me as well, or maybe didn't know that, you know, everything that had been going on, kind of like, what are you, don't do that. That's a bad idea. Just go back to work and like do the things.
Right. No, I just think that, especially when you had that kind of breaking point and you're like, okay, this is what I'm going to go and do for a little while. Not really have a plan. I just kind of feel like sometimes we are motivated or, oh, how are you so brave? Part of that feeling, at least this was for me, when I was doing a lot of traveling and going all over the place, I was like, you know what? I don't care.
Exactly.
I really don't care what happens to me. So you are concerned about me and I love you because you're concerned about me, but I really don't care what happens to me right now. That was like my mindset. Was that kind of yours too?
100%.
I was like, I'm just going to do it. You know, whatever happens is going to happen because that's life. Mm-hmm. That's the lesson that I'm learning right now. So exactly. I'm just going to go do it.
Yeah. And I think on the heels of, you know, everything that had happened, because people say, oh no, South America, it's so dangerous. And it's like, well, like, look at all that's happened in this place, in this life that's supposed to be, you know, safe and predictable. And so like, does it really matter?
I just went into work on Friday and I got attacked at my safe place of work. Mm-hmm. So you know what? If I go off to a jungle somewhere, then whatever happens, happens.
Exactly. And as you say, there was a sense of like, I don't really care. And I think like looking back on it, there was this mixed sense of like, I don't care. Also like fight, flight, like just get me away from, you know, everything in Toronto is memory, you know, surrounded by ghosts of all our memories, like our life that we had, our life that was to be. I think another piece for me as well was we had been trying to have kids and we weren't able to. So I think there was also this almost like, well, I don't have anything to keep me here. You know, of course, like my parents and my siblings and stuff, but it was like, nothing.
You're just kind of like, why not? Okay, so tell us what happened kind of in those 7 months. Where did you end up going and what did you do? And I mean, how was that time?
It was interesting. It was interesting. It almost felt like just trying on different places and different kinds of life and, you know, even just the freedom to like reinvent, right? Going somewhere where nobody knows me. I don't know anyone, so I can just kind of be who I want to be.
Yeah.
And so I ended up like I would work in, you know, just find little jobs in a reception of a hostel or some places teaching. I did a couple of like beach, you know, yoga sessions kind of thing. Ended up staying in Peru for 4 months in like a little surf town and just worked at like a beach bar there trying to learn Spanish. So all the while with the intention of or going back, I guess I should say, to Toronto. And
that's
when
right.
I arrived in Colombia, yeah.
You had the language barrier too.
Totally.
That's just like, you just throw yourself into a completely different place. God, I love it. I just love it. There's nothing like doing that, going somewhere and just not having any expectations. It's kind of a weird feeling, but it's also a fantastic feeling at the same time.
It is. And I think, you know, part of it was almost trying to run from, like, to cut myself off from my feeling and almost from myself that had all of like the sadness and the heartache. It was like, okay, if I can, and I think even in terms of the language, it's starting from being a baby again. And so it's almost like a whole new personality development that happens in, you know, in another language.
Yeah.
So I think that was a piece of it as well.
One of the things that you mentioned was this saying or this phrase that says crisis equals danger plus opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
So that's in Mandarin or Cantonese, like in the symbols, like the Chinese writing symbols. Or my understanding is that different symbols are like a combination of different words. And so the symbol for crisis is like the letter for danger and the letter for opportunity.
I just
which is
love
so
that.
True.
It's so true. It is so true. At the end of your 7 month journey, you ended up getting to Santa Marta, mm-hmm. Colombia. What made you stay there?
It's funny. I had just come from doing an ayahuasca retreat. Ayahuasca is like an ancestral plant medicine in the Amazon of Peru. So, you know, you're totally isolated in,
girl,
you know,
this
the
is
jungle doing, you know, having this, you know, very powerful experience.
Yeah.
That's a whole other.
We will do another podcast
we can talk
episode
about another
about
day.
We will do that. Yes.
But, you know, so coming from that where you're just energetically totally open. And I arrived in Santa Marta on a Saturday night and it was chaos. And it's like, this place is horrible. Get me out of here. And I went back to my hostel. I Googled Naturaleza Santa Marta, like nature Santa Marta. And this place called the Lost City popped up, which is kind of like Colombia's, if you could compare it to like Machu Picchu, it's like the kind of ancestral sacred site. And so it was a 5-day hiking tour through this, you know, very sacred part of the mountain. Felt like a microcosm of grief because it was the most, like, every step just felt, you know, you just see the magnificence of nature, of the world. And it was so excruciating and thinking like, I can't take another step. I'm so exhausted. Like, I just can't do this. And then that part inside where it's, yes, you can look around. Like, life is beautiful and life is painful and life is, anyway, like mixed sense. And then I just had this, like, I almost describe it like a ray of light. There was just this certainty of, oh, this is where my next life is. Like, this is where I'm meant to be right now.
Hey, if you're a widow and you're ready to become a master of your life again after losing your spouse, I want to invite you to join my Miracle Month program starting Monday, May 6th. I am so excited to be bringing this life-changing program to you and so many other widows. This is a 4-week group coaching program where each week we will focus on what it takes to help you heal after loss and move forward to create a life that you truly love and deserve. If you feel stuck in grief, if you feel like there is so much more to life than the way that you feel right now, if you are ready to make some changes to become the next version of you, you know you want more. You know you want to be happy again and feel complete again and embrace life again, then this Miracle Month is for you. I'm going to be sharing things that worked for me and things I've learned from coaching hundreds of other widows, how you can begin to take the steps to rebuild your life through interactive exercises and group discussions. It's the magic of the energy of the group and also the mechanics of the steps you need to take to start creating a life that you love and adore. It's an amazing combination of all of it. If you are ready to take the steps, make the plan, take the action steps you need to live a life of meaning and purpose, to meet your full potential, then grab your spot in the Miracle Month. Now is the time. We kick off on Monday, May 6th, so get in now. Go to widow180.com/miracle month. That's widow180.com/miracle month.